Ruth chapter 4 as we finish our series in Ruth. Ruth 4, starting verse 1, and it says this. Boaz went to the town gate and took a seat there. Just then the family redeemer he had mentioned came by, so Boaz called out to him, "Come over here, sit down, friend. I want to talk to you." So they sat down together. Boaz called 10 leaders from the town and asked them to sit as witnesses. And Boaz said to the family redeemer, "You know Naomi, who came back from Moab. She's selling the land that belonged to our relative Elimelech." Verse 4, "I thought I should speak to you about it so that you can redeem it if you wish. And if you want the land, then buy it here in the presence of these witnesses. But if you don't want it, let me know right away because I am next in line to redeem it after you." The man replied, "All right, I'll redeem it." So then Boaz added or told him, "Of course, if you purchase the land from Naomi, it also requires that you marry Ruth, the Moabite widow. That way she can have children who will carry on her husband's name and keep the land in their family. Then I can redeem it." The family redeemer replied, "Then I can't redeem it." The family redeemer replied, "Because this might endanger my own estate. You redeem the land because I cannot do it." Verse 7, "Now in those days it was the custom in Israel for anyone transferring a right of purchase to remove his sandal and hand it to the other party. This publicly validated," turn to him and say validated, "the transaction. So the other family redeemer drew off his sandal, said to Boaz, 'You buy the land.' Then Boaz said to the elders and the crowd standing around, 'You are witnesses that today I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Kilion, Malon.'" Verse 10, "And the land that I've acquired, Ruth, and with the land I've acquired Ruth, the Moabite widow from Malon, to be my wife. This way she can have a son to carry on the family name of her dead husband and inherit the family property here in his own town. You are all witnesses today." Then the elders and all the people standing at the gate replied, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make this woman who's coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, from whom all the nation of Israel descended. May you prosper in Ephrath and be famous in Bethlehem. And may the Lord give you descendants by this young woman who will be like those of our ancestor Perez, the son of Tamar and Judah." Verse 13. "So Boaz took Ruth into his home. She became his wife. And when he slept with her, the Lord enabled her to become pregnant. She gave birth to a son. And the woman of the town said to Naomi, 'Praise the Lord, who has now provided a redeemer from your family. May this child be famous in Israel. May he restore your youth and care for you in your old age. For he is the son of your daughter-in-law who loves you and has been better to you than 7 sons.'" Verse 16. "Naomi took the baby and cuddled him to her breast, and she carried for him as if she were her own. The neighbor woman said, 'Now at last Naomi has a son again,' and they named him Obed. He became the father of Jesse and the grandfather of David. This is the genealogical record of their ancestor Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron was the father of Ram. Ram was the father of Abinadab. Abinadab was the father of Nashon. Nashon was the father of Salmon. Salmon was the father of Boaz. Boaz was the father of Obed. And Obed was the father of Jesse. And Jesse was the father of King David." So this morning as we break down this text, it says that in the beginning, in this opening picture, that Boaz called together a meeting at the town gate. And the town gate was a spot where men gathered. And this is where deals, life, transactions, and business deals occurred. And when you were going to do a business deal, you would bring elders, you would bring witnesses. So Boaz gets together the men, and he wants them to be a witness. Like when two people get married, there are witnesses. And what are those witnesses there for when two people get married? They're there to hold accountable the man and the woman who are getting married so that they keep their vows. During a wedding ceremony, there's vows. And during those vows, what are they? You know, you get married, death do you part, rich or poor, right? Hopefully rich, not poor, but that's part of it, right? And so vows are said between a man and a woman, and the witnesses are there so that the two people, they uphold the vows that they make to each other. kind of like a baby dedication. When a baby gets dedicated, there are witnesses in the crowd, there are witnesses in the seats, and those witnesses are there to help with the baby. They're there to help mom and dad. They're there so that they are witnesses to the fact that this baby, that this kid is dedicated to the Lord, and they will be a witness, and they will be someone who will help guide and keep that baby accountable to do what that baby should do and grow up in the Lord. In this moment in the town gate, there are witnesses, men who uphold the law, men who upheld each other, men who say, listen, when we handshake, well, in this day, they took off sandals, flip-flops, right? Here's my flip-flop. But when they made a deal, they would stand there for each other, and they would say, this is the word. You gave your word. This is the word that you gave, a witness to hold each other accountable. Hebrews 12:1 says, therefore, we're surrounded by a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith. Therefore, we're surrounded by a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith. And if you ever took a step back to think and to picture, man, I've got, you know, Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, Jacob. I got Noah, the guy who built the big boat. I have King David who took down a giant. I have all these people who went before. They're witnesses to the life of faith, and they surround me. And they're upholding me. Their story and the things that they live through, it's a witness so that I may do what I'm supposed to do on this earth and on this planet. In the beginning text, the men met at the town gate, surrounded by witnesses so that they can make a deal. You're surrounded by witnesses. That's what church is, honestly. We come to church to worship, to honor God, to sing out, to listen to His word, but to also be a witness to one another, to inspire one another, to encourage one another, to keep fighting, to keep moving, to keep doing the right thing. Punch your neighbor and say, you're my witness. You're my witness. And so as the witnesses were standing around, Boaz says to his relative, which is a relative, he says, there is a land here that is available. It is one of our closest relatives by Naomi. Her husband's died, and you have the opportunity to redeem the land. Now, I like how Boaz asked this question. I like how he asked the question because how many of us know sometimes the questions, there's part one, part two, right? Sometimes in questions, there's trick questions like the DMV, or if you have to take, you know, your food handler's card. Everyone's got to do trick questions. Everybody's got to, you know, redo the words. Boaz does that with the questions he asks his, one of his relatives. The first thing he says to him is, hey, would you like to buy this lovely piece of land? It could be yours, and you could have it, and you can take care of it for Naomi because her husband's dead. The first thing out of the guy's mouth and his relative is, yes, I want the land. So Boaz pauses for a second, and he says, oh, but part two, if you want the land, you have to marry Ruth. Oh, now that proposes a little problem. If you were in this day and you were to take over someone's land and there is no hope that the widow would remarry or that she had sons who would carry out the land, the family redeemer, the kinsman redeemer, could take that land and it could become their own land. If the kinsman redeemer was a good man and he gave the land back to the widow and back to her family line, at some point, it would become hers and her family moving forward. And so this guy that he asks in the first question, which is a trick question, do you want the land? He's thinking to himself, there is absolutely no one who is going to get this land. Her husband's dead. Her sons are dead. So if I take the land, I'll keep the land for myself. I'll keep the land for myself. And there was a difference between the two relatives. There was a difference between the two men because Boaz, what he wanted to do, being a righteous man, he wanted to buy the land, but he was going to give the land back. He wanted to buy the land, but he's going to give the land back so that it could be preserved for that family. Instead of the other relative, who was just going to buy it, and keep it for himself. Now, how many of us know that there is lovely gifts that we buy, you know, like buying a car? How many of us love buying a car? Isn't it just wonderful to go out? To me, you know, just as much as fun as driving a car is the negotiation with a salesperson. I thoroughly enjoy fighting, arguing, threatening one another. That is, like, to me, that's just as fun as getting a car. It's so much fun arguing them. And then they got to bring in, you know, the financial guy. Then they got to bring in the other guy. And then they bring in the mob. You know, it's just a fun process. But typically when you go out and buy a car, are you buying a car because it's a car you want for yourself? Or are you buying a car because it's something that you want to share with other people? Most of us don't go out and buy a car because it's something we're just going to let everyone borrow or use, right? We're buying that car for ourselves. How many things in life and how many choices do we make that are based on decisions? I'm doing this, I'm thinking this, I'm going with this. Why? Because it's for myself. Boaz in this story, his character, his faithfulness, and his righteousness, we see it shines because obviously he was getting a little prize out of the deal. He's getting the girl, right? He's getting Ruth, okay? But marriage to him, he was doing it for a right reason and for a righteous reason. The firstborn male that they were going to have was going to be given so that Naomi's family line could be preserved, so the land could stay with Naomi and her family forever. Boaz was a righteous, righteous man. Matthew 6:21 says, wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will be also. And what we do with our money and what we do and what we pay for ourselves, the things that we do every single day, wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will be also. The decisions we make, the choices we make, they reflect the desires that are within. I love in this story, and I don't have one this morning, a flip-flop to throw out at anybody, but I love how they seal the deal. Turn to your neighbor and say, they seal the deal. They seal the deal. Binding, legal, contract, not by signing penman, no pen, right? Not by signing a piece of paper. The binding contract, the transfer of from one person to the next is by taking off their sandal and giving it to the person. This makes it a validated transaction. Validated, check to prove the accuracy, to demonstrate, to support the truth and value in the contract that we are making. In this land, I give everything I have for this moment with my sandal. Isn't that beautiful? Aren't sandals a beautiful thing? Gotta love how we've, you know, there's blood brothers, there's people who spit on their hands and shake, you know, we've done all kinds of different things in the old days to sign contracts and different things. In this story, there was taken a right sandal to make a right choice so that the right man was given the right reward for doing the right thing. When Jesus was here, how many times did he say to his disciples who had fished all night, who were tired, because if you fish all night and you don't catch anything, you're tired, you're bored, you're frustrated. For the disciples in the story, there was two times where a great miracle occurred. There was something that was ginormous. There was a financial, massive reward and blessing that happened. How? When Jesus said, you turn and toss your nets on the right side. On the right side. We know in this story, he took off his right sandal. It was the right sandal. This was the authority given to him as a man and as a person who he was. I'm giving you the authority to take over, to make this contract. There is a right choice in life, and there is a wrong choice in life. There is a right way to do things. How many of us have ever, let's just say, worked on cars before, right? And how many of us know mechanics? Now, I can remember we had a Ford Probe one time that we bought, and the dealer said, oh, this thing's beautiful. It's going to run for years. And we get off the lot, and the transmission started to break immediately. It's one of those cars you buy. It was a fast little car. It was fun. And then he ended up paying half for the transmission. That's a different story. But how many of us have ever bought something, and we were sold a bill of goods, and it's like, man, I hate when the salesperson, which I am, I sell food though, which we all need food, so it's different than selling a car. But that car, we blew the engine on it, and I parked it at the time we were youth pastors at a church in Valvissa, and I decided I was going to take apart the engine, which I've never done before. That poor car sat for I don't know how long, because as I started taking things apart, I had no idea what I was doing, no idea where those pieces were going to go, probably lost some pieces, and eventually that car ended up getting, you know, taken to the junkyard and sold for, I don't know, a few $100. It was horrible. But if I was to take a moment, maybe and ask, you know, I didn't know Sixto 25 years ago, but, you know, who's a mechanic, maybe get an opinion of a mechanic, what's the best way to do and handle this car, I would have had some good advice, right? Maybe he could have shined me on, said no thanks, but, you know, there's times when we try so hard in life at certain things that we don't know how to do. And there are times when we do ask a friend for help and we get great advice. But there's other times we ask for help or we don't ask for help because we're embarrassed, we're prideful. When it comes to spiritual things and spiritual matters, for some reason, man, again, if I need a mechanic help, I know who I'm going to call. But there's times when we need spiritual help where we don't ever pick up the phone. I'm just going to hide in the closet. I'm just going to hide outside. I'm just going to hide around the corner. I don't want to see anybody. I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to reach out for help. I don't want to reach out and ask anybody. God's put us here as people. Remember at the beginning at the town gate where there is witnesses, there are strong men, women. God put us on this life to be here for one another, to stand out, to be witnesses. Jesus' main purpose is to reconcile God with humanity. It is his main purpose as people. We know that the cross, it points up the relationship towards God, and then it points out as a relationship to man. The same for us. It's real simple what God asks us to do, to have a right relationship that's pointed towards heaven, and then to have right relationships with people pointed towards the earth. But how many times sometimes we don't want to ask for help? There's always a right way to do something. There always is a wrong way. There's always a right way, and there's always a wrong way. There's no blended, there's no gray areas. How many of us know in life we're right or we're wrong? Unfortunately, there's a winner, and there's a everybody else ties. No, just kidding. There's a winner, and then there's a losing team, right? It's easy. Life is black and white, and sometimes we're trying to complicate things to make people not understand or see, but at the end of the day, the Bible is clear from beginning to end, there's a right choice, and a right choice for the right reason creates what? A right reward. Turn to your neighbor and say, it's a right reward. A right reward. In this beautiful story, there is a lady that's mentioned out, and as Boaz declares, I'm going to take the land, I'm going to marry Ruth so that the family line can be preserved. These other men, these witnesses say to him, may this lady be fruitful like Tamar. And there's two women mentioned in the story, actually four, but two out of the four were women who were foreigners. They were outsiders. And you know what's crazy about this story? This is how we see God's grace and mercy. We see God's goodness and kindness. Because how many of us know, back in the old days, sometimes we have people, we have situations where in the old days there was a man and there was a woman and there was mom and dads and there was people who were picked and arranged marriages. There was in the old days, how many of us know that, you know, mom and dad, there was more say in who you married than there is today. Today we let our kids, for the most part, make up their own decision unless it's just a whack job. Then we say, heck no, right? But you know, in the old days, things were a little bit more arranged, going back years and years and years ago. There's two ladies in this story, Tamar and Ruth. They were far from the outside, but they were brought into the inside. And God uses these two ladies on the outside to become part of a beautiful story. And not only just a beautiful story, these ladies become the mom of and grandma, like Ruth, of King David. How good is God that he picks a lady? She wasn't from the same town. She wasn't part of the same group. They didn't grow up together playing, you know, hopscotch and hula hoop and basketball and volleyball. Ruth did not grow up. She wasn't in the same clique. She wasn't in the same circles. She was not a part of all the stories as they grew up. She was somebody from the outside. But this woman was picked for whatever reason. She was picked to come in to be a part of the family. But not only in being part of the family, this lady got to be the grandma of King David, one of the greatest kings that Israel's ever had. This person, an outsider, showing God's goodness, his grace, and his mercy. Naomi, in this story, you know, at the end of this day, how many of us have ever lived a long day and just took a very deep breath? Breathing is so good for you. The moment she gets this young grandbaby that's hers, she holds the baby, her life, her land, her future, it's now been completely redeemed. And so she can rest, she can have peace, because there's two people, Boaz and Ruth, and obviously God, who cared about her to say, the life and land that was going to be taken away from you, it's now given back to you. The life, the land, your future, your hope, it's all been redeemed. Everything here is now given back to you so that you can have peace, you can have security. For a lady who was empty, for a lady who was bitter, for a lady who at one point of her life she had everything, and then she lost everything. It says that she becomes full again. Her life becomes full again. And I love at the end of the story, it says Ruth, and it talks about that she is a young lady who's better than seven sons. Can you imagine having seven sons? Whew! Or seven daughters, seven sons, seven daughters. That'd be fun. But in this story, these ladies, they propped up Ruth, and they say she's better than having like seven sons. Why was that comment made? Because in the story, and how many of us know the text, back in the day, having a son, back then is what your future, right? When you look at a son, when you look at your boys, it's like looking at your future. They're going to preserve my name. They're going to preserve the family line. They're going to keep things moving and going for our family. But in this story, it's a girl. It's a woman. It's a young lady that's pointed it out. Ruth is better than having seven sons. And if we were to take a step back this morning, do you think anyone would make that kind of comment about us? If we were to take a step back, do you think any of our friends, our families, our strangers, or people that have met us just for a second would ever make that comment? Man, you are greater. You're far greater than someone who had seven sons or seven ladies, seven kids. God has put us here to live and to make a difference. God's put us here to do great things, no matter where we live and no matter what we go, no matter what we do. Ephesians 5:15 says, be careful how we live. Don't live like someone who doesn't know what's going on. Live like someone who's wise, making the most out of every opportunity in evil days. Don't act thoughtlessly, but understand what God wants us to do. I want to be a type of person that leaves a mark, that leaves a reflection, to make a difference in this life. I know that God hasn't put me here. God hasn't put us here just so that we can live and breathe and die. God hasn't put us here just so that we can just live and just continue to build up and store things in a storage unit and in our garages and continue to build and continue to store and just continue to keep adding to all the junk piles. God has put us here as people to make a difference, to reflect his goodness, his grace, and his mercy, to make opportunities, because the days are evil. There's a lot of evil and darkness and things happening all over the world. And God has put us here, like Ruth, to live, to make a difference. God's put me here to make a difference. When I get up in the morning, I have to make a difference. Wherever I go throughout the day, to make a difference, to have a good attitude, to have a good heart, to put on a good mindset in the morning, to know I'm getting ready for the day. I'm going out. I'm ready to do what I need to do. God has put me here to make the most out of every single opportunity that he gives me, to make a difference. And so I like how these ladies say to Naomi, man, you're lucky because you're fortunate. You have Ruth. She's better than seven sons. Live to make a difference so that your name, your actions, your reflections can be honored by other people. Man, Micah, he's such an awesome young man. You know, there's many times, as we know, where my son works, there's people and that my son is willing to talk to that maybe some other people just don't sit and have a conversation with. You know, my son Micah is a great and awesome young dude who has a very caring heart. One time, I remember just a little story, we're at Shiloh's basketball game, and there was a guy who came to watch Shiloh play basketball. And so instead of sitting with us like he should have, he went and sat with this other gentleman and, you know, talked the whole entire time. It shows the heart that my son has, that he cares for people, that he has compassion to be concerned and care for people. That's what we're meant to do. That's what God has put us here to do. We're here to care for one another. We're here to care, to make a difference. If there's somebody standing alone, if there's someone who is standing alone, if there's someone that nobody likes, if there's someone who's constantly being put up, beat down, if there's someone who's constantly being thrown down and thrown out, we're here to make a difference, to make good on what God has put us to do, to be that reflection. And at the end of the day, for Ruth, Naomi, for Boaz, what was the great reward for them? Their life was propped up because they got to be the mom and dad, the grandparents of King David, and in the family lineage of Jesus Christ. Do we as men and women, do we as parents understand the care, the character, the loyalty, the faithfulness, the attitude, the discipline, the truth that we put into being husband and wife, we put into parenthood, to being a grandma, a grandpa? Understanding, what could our kids do? Where could our kids go? Where could our grandkids go? If I invest in them with truth, with honesty, with love, with grace, with mercy, if I invest with all the things that are in the Bible from Genesis to Revelation, in the people who are closest to me, our kids, our grandkids, if I invest in them, what will God do with them? What will God do through them? How great can our kids be? How great can our grandkids be if I invest the truth? And so this morning, as we get ready to wrap up this story, such a beautiful story as we spent the last few weeks talking about Ruth, Naomi, and Boaz, and all that this story speaks. And so if we were to just recap this morning of what this story speaks and what it speaks to us, you know, every choice, good or bad, it produces something. Every choice that we make, it produces something. Galatians 6:7 says, don't be misled. You cannot mock the justice of God. You always harvest what you plant. And so in the beginning of this story, we saw that for unfortunately Ruth and her husband, they left the promised land. Why did they leave the promised land? Because there was famine and there was struggle. And they leave the place of promise because famine or struggle to go to a different land because they think over there it's going to be a little bit better. But what happened when they got to the other land? The husband died, and then the sons died. One bad choice, which what? Leads to something bad happening. If God tells you to go to the land of the promise, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to stay in the land of promise. Kind of like us here this morning, God's called us to this beautiful land of promise right here in Hemet, this wonderful valley. And for whatever reason, we don't know why God has called us here, right? We know it's to be a light and a reflection. But God's called us here, and if God's called us here, that means that we don't leave here until the job's done. For the story in this moment, how many of us know that when there's a struggle or there's a famine and there's a place of lack, how many people in that struggle and when there's a time of lack, we do what? We typically make bad decisions. When I don't have all that I think I should have, when life just seems to be more of a struggle, typically in our human nature, the first thing that we want to do, it's to run. And so this story, the first thing it speaks is, unfortunately in this story, in this moment, one bad choice will always produce something that's not right. And for them leaving the land of promise, we saw that just begin to snowball. Three family members died. Number two, we see in this story that God teaches us to be patient and to keep trusting in Him no matter what. To be patient, to be patient, to be patient, to be patient, to be patient. As my son was telling me this morning, Josh, on the way here, I'm late, I'm running behind, and I'm moving really quickly in my car. And he said, Dad, remember patience. I don't want to remember patience when I want to speed up the road, right? When I want to fly through Sanderson and hit the dips and be fast. Thank goodness. See, my son was being a witness to me this morning to say, Dad, slow down. It's going to be okay. We're going to be late, but we're going to be okay. In this story, we see Ruth, who's a young lady who had to learn to be patient and had to learn to trust in God. Even though she didn't know God, even though she didn't grow up knowing God, she learned to be patient and she learned to trust in God for the right opportunity. You know, in my life, in my 47 years of living, my first job, I was a food server at the beautiful place and village here, the Village Retirement in Hemet. And so I had the privilege to serve food to all the senior citizens on the fourth floor. It was so lovely. And through my years of working, I was a dishwasher, food server. One time I worked at a place where we took tires and they were bundled together so they could be recycled. I had the opportunity in Minnesota one time to work at a log company where we grinded them and sanded them down to be made for log homes. And at some point, I finally got into where I'm at now, which I'm a salesman. That's just so nice, right? We all love salespeople. But there's two things in my life, two things that has rewarded me and rewarded my family that happened. And I'll never forget. How many of us know sometimes that life can be expensive? How many of us know that life, bills, and things, everything just goes up? And so there was one point in working as a salesman where I was just praying and saying, God, man, everything's just so expensive. God, we need more money. God, what do I need to do? And I can remember praying for a certain amount of time, and there was nothing that I did, but I just waited on God, just waited for God to answer. And then God opened the door. And when God opened that door, the amount of pay that I went at that company from one spot to here was crazy. To be in food sales, to sell green beans, canned green beans to people is absolutely amazing. But it wasn't me. It wasn't my performance. It was that I waited on God. And when God opened the right door, good things happen. One of the bad choices that I made in my work career, there was a time where I got mad at this company I worked for. And instead of praying, because sometimes when we're mad, we don't pray, we just do stuff, right? I decided, you know what? I'm going to leave this company. And when leaving in this company, I took a $120,000 a year pay cut because I was just so mad. And that bad mistake, because I went from waiting on God from before for the right door, see, and then I got mad, angry, and frustrated, and made a wrong choice, lost a lot of money. And years go by, 5 years, praying, God, because how do you lose $120,000 a year, right? Isn't that a big pay cut? Sheesh. Second big thing in my work career, again, God, I need help. H-E-L-P-S-O-S. God, help, doing all kinds of stuff, right? Praying. God, what do I do? Where do I go? And after praying and not doing anything stupid, not doing anything rash, just waiting, God opens another door. And in God opening that second door, God restoring to me, to my family, some of the things that we lost from the years before. Why? Because we prayed, because we waited. In this story, we see that Naomi, she was a woman who had gone through so much tragedy and so much loss, but through being patient and though being, she put her hope and trust in God, she was rewarded. Over and over again, the stories in the Bibles from Genesis to Revelation teach us and they speak to us. If we want to have and see a great reward, if we want to have the full, satisfying life that God wants to give to us, it means that we have to take what the Bible says and then follow it to a T. To listen, to be patient, to understand, and then to be obedient. One of the greatest things in this story that highlights who Ruth was, she says to her mother-in-law, Ruth 1:16, don't ask me to leave you or turn back. Wherever you go, I'm going to go. Wherever you live, I'm going to live. Where your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. Wherever you die, I will die, and I will be buried. May the Lord punish me severely if I allow anything but death to separate us. And this morning we see one of the last things the story speaks about is the loyalty, the faithfulness of one person who is willing to go and follow someone to the very ends of the earth. A humble heart, a contrite heart that's broken, that's humble, that's caring, that's dedicated. How many of us have ever had ham and eggs or bacon and eggs? Maybe we don't like ham and eggs, but bacon and eggs. And if you were to just think about the plate for a second with bacon and eggs, we'll go with bacon and eggs. Unless you like ham and eggs better, then you can picture a ham steak there. And I hate to do this to us in the morning when we're probably a little hungry. But if you had a plate this morning that you were holding and you're about to eat, whether you had a fried egg, over easy egg, scrambled egg, and then you go to the other side of the plate, the other half, whether you had a ham steak or you had four slices of thick slice applewood bacon that's just, it smells so good. There was two things that gave us the ingredients on that plate. There was the chicken, who did what? Laid a couple eggs. And then there was a pig. In order for us to enjoy the ham or to enjoy the bacon, the pig had to what? Give its life. There's a clear difference in the way that we live for ourselves and the way that we live for God. And we can live like chickens. We're just barely popping out a couple eggs. We're just barely giving a couple little things. Or we could be like Ruth. I'm going to follow you, God, to the ends of the earth. God, I'm going to follow wherever you say, whatever you want me to do. God, you can put me in. You can put me in, coach, off the bench. I'm ready to go. Wherever you want me to go, whatever you want me to do, I'm going to follow. I'm going to be obedient. I have the heart to be faithful. I'm going to be humble. Whatever it is you ask of me, God, I'm going to do it. Just kind of like a pig. And the pig, unfortunately, does not have the choice if it wants to give its life. But how many reap the reward of enjoying? If you like a good slice of bacon, if you like a good slice of ham, you're thankful that that pig gave its life so that you could have that ham or bacon. Do we give our life with that amount of sacrifice? I'm going to give my life at that depth so that someone else can be rewarded. And that's what Naomi and Ruth in this story, they lived with faithfulness. They lived with loyalty. They lived with sacrifice. And at the end of the day, there was a great reward. In Colossians 1, starting in verse 15, and it says, Christ is the visible image of the invisible God. Really important to hear the words, to let the words sing in. Christ, Jesus Christ, the visible image who came to this earth so that we can see, so that we can hear, visible image of the invisible God. He existed before anything was created, and Jesus is supreme over all creation. For through him, God created everything in the heavenly realms and on earth. He made the things that we can see and the things that we can't see, such as thrones, kingdoms, rulers, authorities in the unseen world. Everything was created through him and for him. Jesus Christ, the visible image of the invisible God. He existed before anything was created. He's supreme over all creation. For through him, God created everything. For through Jesus Christ, God created everything. In the heavenly realms and on earth, he made the things that we can see and the things that we can't see, such as thrones, kingdoms, rulers, authorities, the unseen world. Everything was created through him and for him. Verse 17, he existed before anything else. He holds Jesus, all of creation together. Christ is the head of the church, which is his body. He is the beginning, supreme over all who rise from the dead. Jesus is the first in everything. For God in all his fullness, God in all his fullness was pleased to live in Christ, and through him, God reconciled everything to himself. God made peace with everything in heaven and on earth by means of Christ's blood on the cross. And so this morning, as you take out your puzzle, you have a piece of paper on it. And how many of us know if you go to the store and buy a puzzle, if it's covered up, you can't what? You can't see what it is that's on the inside. If your puzzle's covered up, you can't see what's on the inside. Many of us, this is how we live in the day that we live in, is life is a little bit puzzled. Life is a little bit blurry, and unable to see the clear things that God has given to us on the inside. And so if you were to open up your puzzle box, and if you were to just take out a couple puzzles, wow, these are tiny little puzzle pieces. I can't even imagine. Aren't those cute? Aren't those cute little puzzle pieces? It's so adorable. My puzzle has like 350 pieces. 350 pieces. 350 pieces. What I need you to do is just take out one little puzzle piece this morning. So with our puzzle piece and our box in our hand, we look at our puzzle piece and we look at our box. See, life was given to us by God in the beginning. He breathed life into us. God gives us life. It says that God sustains life. Our body filled with laminin, which is in the shape of a cross, the cross that Jesus died on, holding our bodies together. The goodness, the fullness of all that God has. But no matter how many puzzle pieces God gives to us, how many people still live in a spiritual life that they can't see the picture? No matter how many puzzle pieces we've been given, no matter if we've been given instructions in life, how many of us know that in God, there's more than one piece to his puzzle? We know that in the Bible, there's 66 books of the Bible. How many of us know that there's more than one piece in God's story? And many of us, sometimes we get stuck on one little piece of the puzzle. And when we're stuck on one little piece of the puzzle, it stops us from seeing the whole picture and what God wants us to see. How many of us know in the beginning we opened up with a scripture of a blind man who could not see. And Jesus came and he spit on the guy. Yummy. And he tried to open, and Jesus, you know, prayed for the man so that his eyes can be open. But what happened in that moment? It said, the blind man said, my eyes are still blurry, I can't see. So Jesus touched the man's eyes again the second time. But in the second time, that's when his eyes were completely healed and made whole. The first time, Jesus gave the ingredient of his DNA, my God DNA. I spit on this man and I gave him a small piece to the puzzle. But that one piece, it wasn't enough. And how many of us know we can't just take one piece of this tiny little puzzle, one little piece of the puzzle. If you were to look at this piece without being able to see the picture, could you tell me what it is and what it stands for? And this morning, as we get ready to wrap up, I've got two boxes here, two puzzles. Oops. Don't do that. As we start to wrap up this morning, I have two puzzle boxes. Now, one of my puzzle boxes, you notice, does not have a covering on it. And the other puzzle box I have does have a covering on it, symbolizing how many of us know that in communion we just took two elements. There was the body, the bread, there was the wine, there was the blood. Two things symbolizing physical, spiritual life, representing everything that we see, but also representing everything that we can't see. There's a clear difference in two puzzles, and it's two ways to live. There are absolutely, every single day, there's two choices to make, a right choice and a wrong choice. We know that as soon as we wake up, we have our enemy. How many of us know there's an enemy? It's called the devil. He's called someone who masquerades as an angel of light. He's out lying, cheating, stealing, trying to get people to fall into sin, trying to get people distracted, trying to take people away from life. Jesus said, when I come back the second time, what will people do? People will be stuck in just living life. Life, kind of like this puzzle and what's covered in it, a life that they'll never be able to see. Jesus said, when I come back, the day and the time and the season, what it's going to look like, so many puzzled people who will not ever really be able to see because they're living with like blinders on their eyes. They believe the lie of the enemy. They believe the lie of the devil. They believe the lie of his friends. Life is about living. Life is about me. Life is about all the things that I need to do. Yes, a job. Yes, a career is important. Yes, family is important. But more than every single thing that we see, life at some point is going to end. At some point, everything that we see will come to an end. And at that moment, no matter what you did on earth for yourself, no matter what you did to store up your kingdom and how much money you made, it won't be enough to see the picture. There's only one way that you get to see the full picture of what God has for you. There's only one way that you get to see the fullness in life. There's communion. There's bread. There's wine. How many of us know there's salvation, there's deliverance, there's healing? How many of us know that there's peace and prosperity and blessing? There's so many pieces to God's puzzle. How many of us know that in this life, there are so many different pieces that make up one giant puzzle? Yes, we want to start with salvation. Yes, I want to be saved. Yes, I want to be cleansed. Yes, I want to know I'm going to heaven. But at the same time, Jesus promises what? Heaven on earth, a rich and full and satisfying life. Jesus promises to heal. He promises us to provide. Jesus promises so many different things all throughout the Bible. And we could live stuck or one piece, or we can allow God to show us the whole piece. And so as we wrap up this morning, as we close and pray, the question is, do I live spiritually unable to see all the pieces that God has for me, or am I living with a clear view in mind? Am I seeing, am I hearing all that God has? And so with that, we're going to pray.